You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
I'm Katie Klein, and this is Field Talk, a podcast in which we explore the work of authors whose studies have been published in three of the Society's journals, Ecology, Ecological Applications, and Ecological Monographs. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Jason Tilianakis from the University of Canterbury in New Zealand, whose article was published in the June issue of Ecology. Jason went to the rainforests, managed and abandoned coffee agroforests, and pasture and rice fields of Manabi in southwest Ecuador to study the interactions between parasitoids and their bee and wasp hosts. He discovered after several months that deforestation, and more specifically canopy cover, indirectly affected these interactions. Thanks for speaking with me this morning, Jason.
Hi, Katie. Thank you very much for talking to me.
When did you visit Ecuador?
Well, I first arrived there in about April of 2003. It's a beautiful country with very friendly people and a hot spot of biodiversity, so it was a pretty great place to work.
And how long were you at the site?
I was there altogether for about 1.5 years of time, actually, there on the ground. The project ran a bit longer.
And were you staying in the forest, or...?
No, I was staying in a small town of about 20,000 people called Hipihapa, and it was in a sort of an agricultural region, so there were forest fragments around the place, but also a lot of farmland.
And can you describe the mosaic of habitats in this particular area of Ecuador?
Well, in the province of Manabí on the coast, there's been widespread proliferation of agriculture all over the place, but nothing like the kinds of expansive monocultures you'd see in the US or in Europe. The use of chemicals and things there is usually generally low compared to other parts of the world, and most of the farms are just small family-owned farms where people grow a variety of different crops, both to sell and for their own personal use. So most people have some corn and or rice, and these fields are burned off each year after harvest to kill pests. But there's also a lot of pasture for grazing cattle, and coffee plantations are also really common, although a lot of those have been abandoned now because of declines in coffee prices over the last decade or so. And this coffee is usually grown in the traditional style of agroforests with diverse shade tree canopy, and people usually retain some sort of natural forest as well on their property.
And what problems do species run into when there are so many variations of habitats fragmented across the region?
Well, fragmentation causes all kinds of problems for species. Depending on the identity of the species, they can have problems dispersing between different fragments. They can suffer due to altered environmental conditions in the fragment compared with an intact forest. They can have problems of inbreeding depression or inbreeding effects and different small population effects. Or they can go locally extinct if some random process kills off the individuals in a fragment and new ones can't get in. So it can affect metapopulations or alley effect or cause all different kinds of problems, just for the ecologists in the group.
So when you mentioned biodiversity, I think a lot of people envision one lush rainforest with an abundance of various species interacting with one another, not necessarily several fragmented habitats. What do you think causes the abundance of species in a local habitat, but the loss of interactions across the whole region?
Well, it's interesting because the diversity of species in a local habitat is determined in part by the conditions of the habitat itself, but also on the availability of species in the surrounding landscape that are able to colonize it. So the total regional diversity is made up of all the species in each of the habitats, and that means that the regional diversity of species is determined not just by the species diversity in each habitat fragment, but also partly by how dissimilar those fragments are to each other. So if every patch or fragment had the same species, then the regional diversity would be the same as the local diversity within each patch. So as patches become more similar in the species they contain, the turnover among patches declines, and so does the regional diversity. So this has usually been looked at in terms of species diversity, but we've found the same to be true for the diversity of interactions between species.
In the study, you looked at how land use plays a role in parasitoid interactions with their bee and wasp hosts. What did you find out about the effects of deforestation on these interactions?
So we found that in more intensively managed agricultural systems like pasture and rice, the interactions between species, so that's the quantitative food web structure, came homogenized at the whole landscape scale. So this means you could go from one pasture to another that's sometimes tens of kilometers away, and you'll find the same species interacting at the same frequency, and then the same thing happens again through time. So you see the same interactions occurring in one month in any other month of the year in a simplified habitat. But in contrast, the species and the ways they interact and the forested habitats are much more variable in space and time. So when you add together the food webs from the forest sites, there's a lot of turnover among sites and through time, so they have much more diverse set of interactions at the regional level. Now, we also found that this homogenization of the whole food web structure wasn't just caused by homogenization or increased similarity of the host and parasitoid communities, but rather it was caused by the different habitats altering the ways in which the same species were able to interact with each other. So in addition to affecting the whole structure of the food web, it has important implications for studies that compare food webs across site, because we showed that the food webs described from different habitats may not be equally representative of the true dynamic interacting community web.
Therefore, it was the loss of canopy cover that changed the interactions, not the amount of land use. Why is that?
Yeah, exactly. Even the managed coffee agroforests, which are a productive crop, so they are an agricultural habitat, they had food web structures that resembled those of native forests, both in their average structure and in their turnover or variability in structure. So it wasn't agriculture per se that was the problem, but rather it's the simplified structure of the deforested habitats, which we're presuming better allowed the parasitoids to find their hosts, and therefore allowed a greater proportion of the potential interactions to actually be realized or take place. Now, we found in previous work that this leads to higher rates of parasitism of bees and wasps in the open habitats, which is a pity because the bee pollination and biological pest control by wasps are important ecosystem services for farmers in the region. So the intensification of agriculture is actually hurting the farmers themselves.
Can you briefly explain the parasitoid bee life cycle and how they interact?
Yep. Well, the bees and wasps that we worked with are solitary, so they're not social species like the honeybee or the yellow jackets. And they tend to nest in cavities in dead wood or in plant stems. So a female usually leaves a handful of larvae in a nest with enough food for their development. But then these bees and wasp larvae can then be attacked by a variety of different parasitoids. So parasitoids are insects, usually different kinds of wasps, that are parasitic during their larval stage. So the female parasitoid lays their eggs either inside or on the larva of the host bee or wasp, and then when the egg hatches, it eats its way through the living host and eventually kills it.
So why did you choose parasitoids for the study of food webs?
Well, parasitoids are perfect food web studies. They're very diverse, but most of all, it's just easy to record the interactions with their host, because you can simply rear out a host and see what parasitoids comes out of it. With predators, it can be much more difficult, because you have to either follow them around and see what they eat, or cut open their stomachs and try to identify what's inside. So as much as anything, it's just because parasitoids are a very easy system to accumulate data on interactions.
Seeing that parasitoids had an easier time locating bees and wasps in the rice fields compared to the forested area, why is that?
Well, we can't really say for sure, but it's probably to do with the much more open habitat being structurally less complex. So an open rice field, it's much easier for a parasitoid to search and to find all of the potential hosts that it's able to use.
The study also showed a relationship between the size of the parasitoids and the variability of interactions. What role did size play?
Yeah, that's true. Body size is well known to be important for food web dynamics, partly because larger predators can usually eat larger prey, and also because metabolic rate scales with body size. However, in parasitoid host systems, the parasitoid can actually be smaller than the host it eats, so sometimes different rules can apply. But in our study, we found that sites with larger parasitoids and smaller hosts tended to have a more stable food web structure. So that is, there was less variability through time in presence and frequency of the different interactions. We can't say for sure why this is, but it may be because larger parasitoids can fly further and cover more ground to find their hosts, so they're more likely to realize any potential interactions. Plus, they also live longer, so they bring a degree of constancy to the web. But in contrast, the host larvae don't move around, so their effect on web structure will depend on how patchily they're distributed around the habitat. So smaller species tend to be more ubiquitous in space and time, whereas larger hosts are more likely to be patchy in their distribution. This could mean that small species are sort of the stabilizing fabric of the food web as a whole.
You talk about the Homogenesis era in your paper. What is it and how does it affect biodiversity?
Well, the Homogenesis is a name coined by ecologists to describe the current period in biological history. So species are going extinct globally, and in many places they're being replaced by the new invasions of globally widespread species. This means that the distinctness of local floras and faunas is actually declining, and they're becoming more similar or homogenized at the regional scale. So this is a major concern, because the loss of regional diversity can reduce the insurance value of having those species around, and the same's also been argued for the loss of genetic diversity at a regional scale. So what we've shown is that the same is also true for the diversity of food web interactions.
Do you have any plans for future research on the topic?
Well, we're still looking at a number of different forces that affect food web structure, and I think the effects of human changes to the environment on food web structure is a really exciting topic, and it's one that I'd like to stick with for a while still.
And will you be returning to Ecuador anytime soon? I imagine that's quite a plane ride.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the project's finished, so and I don't have any immediate plans to return, but if any opportunity comes up, I'd love to go back, at least for a visit.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today, and I know it's really early in New Zealand right now, so I do appreciate it.
No, thank you.
That was Jason Tilianakis from the University of Canterbury on the effects of deforestation on the interactions between parasitoids and their bee and wasp hosts from the June issue of Ecology. I'm Katie Klein, and this has been Field Talk.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Gatelli. For a link to Dr. Gatelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.